Okay. Hello, everyone. So today we will talk about turning Chromebooks into regular laptops. Go into a sort of detail of what does it take to actually make them run Linux, because Chrome OS is in Linux, as you will see in a bit. So yeah, let's start. So what we, who we are, I'm a systems engineer by day, hacker by night, you know the story. I contribute to AppSync kernel, Fedora project, PostmarketOS, and so on, so on. I'm also one of three admins in the org community. And I have a pile of hacked Chromebooks, as you know, you may know.
So I'm Domi. I have toyed with core boot and hardware hacking ever since ThinkPad X230 was still actually a reasonable laptop to own. I have been nerd sniped by Ellie into Chromebook hacking, so that's why I'm here. And you may know me from doing absolutely cursed stuff with Bash. Search for this after the presentation, not right now.
Okay. So what are those Chrome OS devices? Because it's not just Chromebooks. There are also Chrome bases and Chrome boxes. So those are devices manufactured by manufacturers like HP, Asus, Lenovo, according to Google specifications. Like, for instance, they need to use specific amplifiers, embedded controllers, and the firmware stack has to be open source, and it's actively maintained by Google. So we have quite a variety of hardware. Like you can get one for like 30 to 50 euros on the cheapest side. Those usually are made for students and they're very durable and last like 12 hours on battery. So they're great. Then you have like middle range, like Pentiums, i3s with varying storage. And then you have high end like Ryzen, NVMe, AMOLED screen, 16 by 10. So this is like a high end stuff. Because Chrome OS isn't really a thing that people want to use, they are considered e-waste, which is kind of sad because the hardware is actually very good and you can find them very, very cheap on secondhand markets. Like I mentioned, the German Lake devices can be found for like 50 euros and Tiger Lake, which is what I have here, or Ryzen can be found for like 250 euros. Which is, you know, a very great, very good deal.
Search for clearance sales because sometimes you can get them for literally nothing. Like they are really cheap, and like schools get rid of them constantly because they get abused by students to hell and back. So
yes,
they are really easy to get hold of.
Yes, in fact, this one has broken screen. I got it for 20 euros on the in the recycling center. So. And they have great debugging tools, and we'll talk about in a bit. And pretty much most of the firmware stack is open. So what's Chrome OS? It's basically kind of like Android. It uses a Linux kernel, but you know, of course, Google has their own patches. Some of them are upstream, some of them are not. And some people, or a lot of people, believe that it is based on Gentoo, but it's actually not Gentoo. It does use a Portage as a build system, but you know, it's 64-bit, unless you have like an ARM device with under 4 gigs of RAM, then you have 32-bit user space. It uses Upstart as an init system, which was known like Red Hat Enterprise Linux 6, uses SL Linux, and user space is fully custom. For instance, you have Linux containers called Crostini. That's how you can get like Debian running on it. ArcVM, which you can, makes you it possible to run Android applications. Chrome OS Audio Server, and as a replacement for Pulse Audio or PipeWire. And then BioD as a fingerprint user space fingerprint driver, because fprint isn't really cutting it for those kind of devices.
What's important to remember is that Crostini, like the Linux containers, like it is basically LXC with extra steps, but it has quite a lot of overhead, not only because, well, Chrome OS is still running in the background, so it takes like a gig of RAM at least, but also because it has a lot of indirections between the hardware, so you can basically forget about running any highly performant applications on that. Also, it's non-trivial to actually make like X server applications run on that. So like it's a whole bag of worms. it works. Some people have used it and loved it, but like we are not about that, just so you know.
So what is Corbett? It's an open source Rumor implementation. It's kind of similar to U-Boot, which is mostly used on ARM, and EDK2, which you can find on like, ARM servers and some development boards. EDK2 basically provides like UEFI runtime services. So Corbett, as you probably know,
Some of you probably know Corbett from like a lot of old ThinkPads. That's how it got popular. And there's also like LibreBoot, which is the blobless implementation. And those devices always had the problem of being like 10 fucking generations behind. So they weren't really useful for any real work unless you are a diehard. And what changes here is that we actually can get Corbett on devices that are recent.
Yes, in fact, it took us like a week to get Ryzen 7000 working. So,
yeah.
They ship with Corbett by default. Of course, implementation isn't really compatible with upstream Linux kernel out of the box, but they mostly upstream their code, and we can use that to write patches for it. So, what's the point of our project? Like, if it's use Corbett, then just use Corbett, right? Well, kind of, because not all patches are upstreamed, and there are differences in API tables and so on. So, Google uses DevChart as a payload, which requires a Chrome OS kernel partition scheme. Like, you need to have three copies of the specific kernel partition. I believe also rootfs, and also because of the directory slots, when they apply the upgrades, they can, if let's say an upgrade fails, they can roll it back.
The problem is that it's not at all compatible with like anything that you'd expect. So this is not useful to us at all, and. We have some tools made by the community to actually work with DevChart, but again, this is not the direction that we want to go in.
DevChart tools was actually made by Alper Nebiasek, which is who's a Debian contributor. Mm. It's a great tool that basically wrote without any documentation. He basically looks at an ELF header to find out if the architecture is x86 or ARM, but it's still an abstraction layer. And because we have non-compliant API, that results in like broken USB, audio, input devices, especially touch screens, and sleep. So we need to fix that in a firmware, because otherwise it doesn't work. Mainline kernel isn't well tested. Like Google upstreams their stuff, but we don't think they're really testing it. We find a lot of regressions like all the time, and it's basically like constant mouse and cat mouse thing.
Yeah, the important thing to remember here is that Google upstreams the code and like just publishes it only because they are obligated to. And like upstreaming code isn't that much work when you actually do have it already and you don't want to be a GPL violator. Looking at some Chinese SOC vendors. They are not doing their best. They are not putting enough time to actually make this work. So we are the people that are doing those things.
Yes. So Google actually does offer alternative payloads. Like you can, DevChart has a memory allocation that can jump to, you might know CBIOS from old ThinkPads, EDK2 or U-Boot. But still, that still doesn't fix like API tables, power sequencing, doesn't have NVRAM support. So basically, when you reboot, all the variables are being lost.
So this is basically a cheap way to get core booted lmao. It is not useful for us just because we cannot fix bugs in it. Like we could, but it involves us upstreaming into Google, and this is kind of missing the point. So we decided to do it ourselves. And what is the importance of open firmware? Like we have already touched upon it a bit, but to reiterate, because this is really important to remember, if your device doesn't have a working firmware, and this is not only about Chromebooks, this is about your laptop that you may have right now. If something is broken, you can either rely on your manufacturer to actually fix it, maybe sometime, or do nothing. There is nothing else you can do. You can port Coreboot, but this will take like weeks. Meanwhile, here, you can just fix it. You can just compile the code and fix your issues. And magically, you have a laptop that's no longer a paperweight.
And it's actually important to notice, because on most laptops, you cannot just port Coreboot because of Intel Boot Guard, which basically prevents you from running code that has been signed with manufacturer's keys. Well, in this case, we don't have Boot Guard, so no, we don't have that problem.
So furthermore, firmware updates have a lag because the manufacturer of your device that requires the firmware, so for example, the CPU, imagine the microcode. Imagine there's a patch in the microcode. It needs to go through the pipeline of vendor, so your motherboard vendor, to you, and you need to flash it. Meanwhile, if you do it yourself, then you can just build your own BIOS image and flash it yourself and possibly get the mitigation in hours instead of days or weeks sometimes.
Yes, in fact, we're not even vulnerable to Logofail because we're up to date with EDK2 and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, Logofail was the thing that some of you might have heard in the past months. Basically, an exploit in the logo parsing routines, the boot logo parsing routines. And, well, we never were vulnerable to it. Because we had EDK2 that was recent enough not to be.
Yes. So we can around edge cases, like we have people doing all sorts of wacky modifications to those devices. And because the code is open source, even if, for instance, other like you want to replace EMC module with NVMe, you can do that with if you patch Coreboot. And for instance, so it doesn't work on stock firmware, but it works if you patch it. And when you flash or build, then you can just swap NVMe and it works.
There's so many other reasons, like just think about it. We literally have people that started with hacking Chromebooks and ended up in like with real jobs as firmware developers. So that's really cool.
Yeah, for instance, Mr. Chromebox, yes. Matt DeVillar.
Precisely. The cool part about Chromebooks is that the embedded controller is actually open. Like, this is something that may make your eyes open wide, because historically, the FSF was really just like fine with the state of ThinkPad embedded controllers being closed. They're just like, we can't do anything about it. Let's just maybe someday. So yeah, here it's just open. Why the air quotes, though? Well, basically, Google has pulled a Google again. So they publish code, but they do the least amount of work to actually make it usable for us. So we need a CH root to like a specific board of Chromium OS to actually build a specific firmware. So this is a pain, but well, technically you can hack on it, and we will probably work on making this situation better in the future. So look forward to that, I guess.
Yeah, especially because they switched to ZephyrOS in recent machines.
Yeah, that's also important. Also because there's cross-ETCi isn't used only in Chromebooks. It's also used in some framework laptops. So yeah, there is a whole ecosystem. And hopefully, this is going to expand even further. So yeah, about our project, the CruelTrapbook project. Go ahead.
So basically, we fix Google stuff. That's all.
Yeah, whether they like it or not.
So we basically patch ACPI tables, or in case of ARM, we recently started working on ARM devices. We patch device trees and kernel modules. Then we have like platform-specific code like PWM backlight, DCSS controller, Intel MUXes, like power sequencing for touchscreen and other S2C devices, because touchscreen will not work on stock firmware. Well, the situation is actually getting better as Google is pulling all patches from upstream, but you know, it takes time. And then a lot of debugging, like EDK2, which we're using to provide UEFI runtime services for these machines. And we added Secure Boot and PXE in release 4.20. And you know, then debugging like NVMe, USB enumeration, EMSC, you know, and there's also GOP, which initializes the display and provides users with frame buffer, basically. And a lot of debugging and bug fixing.
Like, this is platform specific. Every different laptop has different quirks, and there's nothing you can do to fix them globally because hardware is different. Hardware is a real world.
Yes.
What do we do in the Linux kernel? This is like, we are repeating ourselves a bit with the core boot stuff because, well, we need support on both sides to make this correct. So, ACPI tables once again. Yes. We well, do the same dance with actually testing the code that we're running because we have a community that relies on it.
And we daily drive those machines anyway.
Yes.
So.
Like, this laptop is literally a Chromebook. This laptop, which you might mistake for a thing, but it's also a Chromebook.
And then, you know, a lot of specific vendors like Intel Power Management MOX introduced in Tiger Lake and Alder Lake machines gave us a lot of headaches. And even though the workaround was simple, it took us a while to fix it because, you know, we all have our lives. Then you have specific hooks for Chrome OS embedded controller, like I2C tunnels for the sensors for the lead and that kind of stuff. You know, and then audio, because all post 2016 machines had broken audio for years, and you know. Right?
Yeah, audio is like a whole other bag of worms. You basically have hardware that is bespoke, and no Intel HD for you over here. We have codecs and DSP chips, so it is really different compared to what you might expect in a PC platform. Nowadays, we have like good kernel support, mainly because we have worked on it for so long that we actually like fixed a lot of those issues. We're working with upstream distros to include the kernel modules that are actually in Linux already, just including those in the standard kernel builds. And we've had great success so far, except for Canonical. Fuck Canonical.
Then we have devices using DSP. Those are like post-Skylake machines for Intel, and on Ryzen 7000 and Steam Deck OLED, AMD started using some open firmware as well. So we also wrote our own use case manager configuration files because they're not one-to-one compatible. We have to actually rewrite them based on Chrome OS, and that's how we get OSA to work and also Pipewire.
OSA/OCM is basically the thing that tells the kernel about the topology of your sound card, so where the mixers are, what the pipelines look like, inputs, outputs, and like all of this. So this is required to get audio to work.
Yes. And then we have audio voice speech, which is a new kernel module introduced by Cezary Rojewski and Pierre-Louis Bozart. So Google implemented those limits in user space because they have full control over what they ship on those machines. Like, every board has their own builds. But we don't control user space nearly as much, and we want to be distro agnostic. We don't want people to rely on like one distribution. Like, there used to be Gallium OS, which has died like 3 years ago, and contributors had disappeared, and there's no deprecation notice. So, you know, we are trying to upstream this stuff as much as possible. Of course, this is still not finished. We're working on it, and that's why on some devices we don't enable speakers yet. So, and if you think that we're exaggerating, you know, that's what happens if you try to actually run those machines without any limits. This is a Chromebook called Snappy, HP Chromebook, whatever. You can notice in the background that Maxim 98357A amplifier is getting hot.
Over here.
Yes. And the left speaker actually got damaged. It got to 70 degrees, and the voice call had melted. So we really do not recommend running without any limits.
It's worth noting that this is a time lapse from like 2 minutes, but the heat up like literally takes only a few seconds, so it doesn't take much to damage your speakers permanently.
Yes, because I increased the volume in alpha in incrementals because I didn't want to load them up outright. So
it's worth mentioning that like we have been praising the platform for being so open, so false. But it's actually not all false. So like microcode is not false. I think that everyone has expected that. And there is a whole bunch of stuff, especially like the management engine and the AMD PSP, that is not open at the, and it will probably never will be. There is some progress with like upstreaming parts of it, parts of the firmware that's still blobs.
Basically, platform in code.
Yeah. So this is a work in progress. Hooray, AMD! Maybe we'll have like more open laptops. On ARM64, basically the same story. Like
a bit better.
We have DRAM training code, power management, and a bunch of other things that are just bespoke and closed. Actually, when you go to Qualcomm, it gets a bit worse, in my opinion, because you have the always-on processor. This is just like the Intel ME. Worth noting about Qualcomm, we don't have that many information about it because those devices are expensive and, well, we pay with our own pockets for all of the development. So yeah. We haven't done much reversing on them yet, but this is a work in progress again.
Yeah, for instance, in America, they cost like $150, and here they cost like €600 or so.
Yeah, and actually the same is true in the other direction. Like you can get some devices in the US much cheaper than here. So just look around. This is a fun slide. So many years ago, there used to be those eBay sellers proclaiming that, oh, we have made a privacy-aware laptop running Libre boot and no blobs. It's so secure. So let's maybe compare those laptops to our offering. So of course, we have open BIOS. Like, this is a given. But on our end, we also have open embedded controller. That's kind of cool. Unfortunately, on neither of those ends, we have the Intel Management Engine / AMD PSP actually open, like except the X60, but that's like old. It will be legal to drink, like so old in a few years. So like,
And we cannot disable Management Engine on those platforms because DSP firmware that is being loaded onto a separate core that is doing all the processing. Needs to be verified by Management Engine. So if the code, for instance, needs to be signed with Intel keys and we sign it with community keys, then the firmware will refuse to boot. And same case is that if we disable Management Engine, the handshake will fail and DSP will refuse to boot the firmware. So, you know.
Yeah, next point. It usually required special tools to flash, so like either an external flasher or in some cases you could have gotten around with using like exploits to flash core boot, but those, like except for a few cases, those were really unreliable. Personally, I have bricked like 4 X60s using the exploit, so like I wouldn't recommend it. But yeah, on our end, we just need a paper clip if you're like really unlucky, and sometimes just a screwdriver. That's nothing. Is it available new? Well, Chromebooks, yes. ThinkPads, no. Unless you're willing to pay like really big margins, is it reasonably fast? And like a lot of you will probably see this and think, oh gosh, we are overreacting. 2012 wasn't that long ago. And look, let me tell you, when I see prices of Chromebooks compared to their performance and I compare to ThinkPads, there is no competition. Like, seriously, the Chromebooks are winning. And yeah, the price. Like, a 10-year-old device, surprisingly expensive. ThinkPads have this stigma around them, or maybe like, just like, they are really expensive because they are popular, they are hackery, they are cool. And well, we strive to make Chromebooks cool as well, so like maybe after this presentation, you will get some hacker cred for using one, but like. And yeah, long story short, you cannot escape blobs. So it's not Libre. But in practice, it's better than it was 10 years ago, and by a big margin. And we are heading towards like making it even better. This is the practical part of the presentation. I'm hooked. I want a Chromebook. How do I hack it? So firstly, you need to pick a fun device. We will have another section about precisely this in a second. And most of them can be had for really cheap. You should just look around. The easiest way to do it is like x86 from Intel. Great support, just nothing to be said. Hard mode is AMD. We have some problems on some platforms, but like Ryzen is cool. And expert mode is ARM64. Basically no support, but we're working on it. Eli actually has like the only ARM64 Chromebook in existence that's running Fedora. So like that's really cool. Yeah, second step. Obtain or make a Suzy Q cable. This is not this is recommended, but this is totally optional. You don't need this, but this gives you awesome like tools to debug and hack your Chromebook later. So, for example, you can use this to unpick your Chromebook with Flash ROM, just from another device, and it also exposes a bunch of UART ports. Bonus, if you make a Suzy Q cable yourself, you can debug some phones with it, some
like
Google Pixels.
Google Pixels with Tensor chip. Mm. You just need to add TTL converter instead of plugging it into USB port.
Yeah. Third step, unlock write protect. And this really varies between devices. We have documentation, so like, just figure it out what it is for yours. It is always possible, and it is never problematic like on Android phones where you need to unlock the bootloader and wait. So you'll be fine. And yeah, Flash and Android. This is literally doable with no tools whatsoever. You just need to unlock developer mode on Chrome or use a Suzy Q cable, and you're golden. And yeah, cool devices, because we've talked a lot about meta, but not about the devices. So there is this framework Chromebook. It really has no point being a Chromebook besides, I don't know. It has Thunderbolt 4. This is really cool. It has a really nice screen. It's actually quite fast. And yeah, on the picture here, you can see Coolstar running Cyberpunk 2077 on the Chromebook with a GPU. So this is insane. This is something that's not possible on the original firmware, let me tell you.
She also installed like 64 gigs of RAM in it.
So. Yeah, it has socketable RAM. This is really cool for like a laptop that's produced nowadays. Then there is our personal favorite, the Crane, Lenovo Duet. And it's an ARM Chromebook. Unfortunately, it only has 4 gigs of RAM, but it has great modding potential. So it has a detachable keyboard and it has pogo pins. We have actually reverse engineered what they do. So this is like 3 volts, then USB pins, then ground, and one GPIO pin to measure like a resistor to check what's connected. We're not finished with doing anything with it, but like we're planning to release like models for making a mechanical keyboard for it. That would be really cool, like mechanical keyboard and like expansion ports, basically. And yeah, it's just a really cool device. It's really lightweight. It's like 10 inches, and I would recommend it. And yeah, my personal favorite, because I'm a ThinkPad diehard. We have a device that has a track point, and it has a Ryzen CPU, 16 gigs of RAM in the top configuration, an M.2 slot inside, actually. And yeah, the outside I/O is quite good as well. And as a bonus, it's a tablet. So it has an integrated stylus that's USI compatible, and you can draw in it. That's really cool. And some of you might have heard of this one from like a video that was published by last week by Bringo Studios. This is basically a conferencing room device. But if you open it, you find some really interesting things. Like you have socketed RAM, an M.2 slot. The best party trick of them all is the HDMI in. Like, I love that. And just think about what you can do with this.
It also comes with Google Coral AI module installed.
Yeah, so you can do fun stuff, presumably.
Home Assistant, yeah.
Yeah, so we'd like to thank all of those people, especially people at Fertilabs, Collabora, people at Chromium, Linaro, and U-Boot. Our community as well, because it wouldn't be possible without them. And, well, everyone that has helped with us with the presentation. So, yeah, many thanks. Great. And, yeah, contributions welcome. This is basically everything. If you have any questions, then feel free to ask them.
Wow, cool. Thanks a lot for this presentation. So we have about 8 minutes for Q&A. So please line up to the microphones. I think we start with microphone number whatever.
Number two. Hello. So thanks for the talk. I have two questions. One is simple one. So have you ever seen the Chromebook without a pouch battery? Something more kind of 18650?
Define pouch battery.
Okay,
I get it. Yeah. There are some really old Chromebooks with 18650s. I'm thinking ThinkPad X131E, but I wouldn't recommend getting them because they suck royally in terms of performance. So yes, but actually no.
Okay, and the second question is like how modifiable stuff, you mentioned the EC firmware is open source, but how modifiable it is? How is it feasible to change like a charging behavior or something like that?
Yes, you can change basically whatever you want. You can make it so it wouldn't wake up if you open the lid. You can change like charging constraints. We actually have a user space tool written by our committee that can limit charge like let's say 85%. And you can also control the fan and also like PWM backlight and all sorts of stuff. So, you know.
And most of those features are actually in stock. So if you launch EC tool, and that's an open source tool by Google, then you can just send comments to the EC to like either engage the fans or disable them or like just do stuff. That's really cool. Wow, we're getting a demo.
Yes.
So I think
that was a nice message.
As long as you prepare a demo, I will just announce that we're probably running out of time for all the questions. So maybe we
go
can.
Ahead.
No worries.
Maybe we can have one
Thank
from
you.
The internet in between. Is that possible?
Yes, it is. The question is on modern Chromebooks, where undocumented jumpers, how you can find them to unlock the flash.
For most of them, we have documentation on our wiki. For the ones that we don't, there isn't going to be that many of those jumpers on the motherboard. So you are probably going to find the spot that looks like you should bridge it. And if it looks like it should, if it looks like a duck, it's probably a duck, you know?
Worst case, you can also just short the pin 3 and 8, which is pulling write protect pin high to VCC rail, and that way you can also bypass hardware write protect. It's documented in SPI documentation, so.
Interesting. Microphone number one, please, now.
Are you aware of the speaker safety daemon that's developed as a part of the Asahi project? Because, well, that's kind of similar to what you're trying to achieve with the audio limiting things.
Great question. We actually don't have smart amplifiers. The problem with that is that sound open firmware introduces limits in firmware. And from user space, you don't know that the limit is even there. But those amplifiers are like a dumb amplifiers. So the only control you have over it is setting GPIO pin low and high. Then in the driver, if there is nothing playing for 15 seconds, it sets GPIO pin low. But we don't have any control like for temperature monitoring or anything like that. So it has to be done either in the firmware or we have to do like explicit curve how to limit the power that amplifier is outputting. We're working with guys from Intel on it, but you know it's a work in progress.
Good, let's take microphone one again.
Hi, great talk. I just saw the Bringer Studio video recently. I guess you are the people that helped them getting
yep.
this abomination to work. So I have a question about this. In the video, you can see that the performance of his device is not that great. Is this in some way firmware related, or is this just misconfigured?
No, it's because it's a Kaby Lake mobile platform. It's like, I think, Core i5-1850U, which is really not very, well, he made a video about gaming, which is not for gaming. But for us hackers, it would be a great potential for running like OpenWRT on it or pfSense. So, you know.
It could also be a great streaming PC because it has like hardware encoding, so you can possibly capture the HDMI, probably mix in a camera and upload that to Twitch or YouTube. Like, that would be cool.
All right, thanks.
You're welcome.
Could we have another question from the internet, please?
Yes, this is a more general question. Are there many Chromebooks with easily upgradable RAM?
Unfortunately, the only one we know about is very old one, I think, Parrot, which is Haswell, and the framework Chromebook that we have talked about. So unfortunately, most of the RAM is soldered, and you have like SPD profiles in Coreboot. So you probably could upgrade it if you have a hot air, but you know, then if you have a hot air, then you can do whatever you want. So
it's important to remember that Chromebooks are like 10 years old, and some of the old devices did have socketed RAM, but you shouldn't really get anything older than 2018.
Though the Chromebooks do actually have upgradable RAM.
Yep.
Okay, microphone number two now, please.
Yes, I have a question on the AVS. Have you verified if there's any DC current through a differential driver of that speaker causing the heat up instead of the audio content and equalization of it?
Yes, we poked it with the oscilloscope, and we found that basically, how does it work is that in some of the open firmware, they've put like a limit. We're not exactly sure how that works, because then again, even though it's open source, we have a lot of things to do. We know that with open source, you can run it on some machines, but you won't get like headphone jack working. But then on AVS, you can get it working with just a headphone jack for now. And we know that with AVS firmware does have it implemented, from what we've heard from Cesare, but we don't have topology for this yet. So, you know, and apparently that's a problem with some kind of vendor and, you know, sorry.
Okay, so we take one more question from the internet, and all the other questions, I think we don't have time for them, but you can come to the stage later on and talk to the speakers and probably ask your questions yourself.
Yeah, okay. One question was, at the beginning of the talk, you talked about the AMD Ryzen CPUs running within a week. How did you get the AGE SA updates, though?
Right, so AMD CPUs are right now are a terrible hack. We hacked a verified boot to load the burst stage, design burst stage on ARM core from stock firmware. And we basically hacked the vBoot API to boot up-to-date core boot builds. It is a terrible hack, and we're hoping to get updated builds soon. But for now, you know, it's a hack, and it can be a bit unstable. So we're really careful with builds we're publishing.
Okay, Ellie and Domi, thank you again for this nice talk.
You.